to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts today, Jackie Norman, with my co-host, Maggie Westphal.
Coming up today's show, we'll be hearing from some teachers around about the new Community Academy in Ames, as well as information about two upcoming events, yoga and craft brews and cycle games.
Yeah, so it should be a pretty interesting hour, not only because this is my first time hosting. Most of the listeners might recognize my name since I am an engineer for Local Talk on Wednesdays and Fridays, but I normally do not talk, so this is going to be a first for me. So I figure as long as the place is still standing when I'm done, then it went okay. Since it is Friday, we have Dennis Hart with the news for us. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Maggie and Jackie, and let's hope it's still standing after I finish here. Let's start with last Saturday's Ames Tribune, which reported that cities all around Story County were getting set for fireworks season. The state approved legislation last year that allowed the sale and possession of fireworks from June 1st to July 8th and from December 10th to January 3rd, and allowed the discharge of fireworks at specific times those days. But that same legislation allowed cities to set their own regulations for fireworks, and you have to remember that Ames does not allow fireworks to be set off within city limits at any time. Story City and Huxley also ban the setting off of fireworks, while other towns either follow the state ordinance or have their own separate rules. Saturday's Tribune also reported that the state Supreme Court ruled on Friday that a Story County Sheriff's deputy acted appropriately when he checked on a car that had been parked on a county road in the middle of the night a couple of years ago, resulting in the arrest of the driver on drunken driving charges. The Trib also reported that a seventh man from Des Moines had been arrested for his alleged involvement in an Ames robbery this past April. And the paper reported that the search for a new director of Iowa State University's School of Education will continue after four finalists for the position were interviewed this spring, but none of them got the job. Sunday's Trib had word that Ames Parks and Recreation staff had spent much of the week before sprucing up Brookside Park after it was flooded when Squaw Creek poured out of its banks after that massive thunderstorm on June 14th. City crews power washed the park's shelters and playground equipment along with the skate park across the street. Staff members also removed debris from the sand volleyball court and the baseball field. Now, next on the city's fix-it list, the Stuart Smith and Emma McCarthy Lee Parks, both of which were also affected by the flooding. At the Emma McCarthy Lee Park, heavy rain washed out the pedestrian bridge that spans a creek. The city did not have a timetable or an estimated cost on replacing that bridge. Sunday's Trib also reported that Ames rivers were receding and carrying surface runoff out of the area after recent rains washed more than 100,000 pounds of farm fertilizer off local fields. There was more in Sunday's Tribune, including word that a development group out of Pella is planning to build an independent senior living cooperative on the northernmost border of Ames. The project is planned for the southeast corner of West 190th Street and Hyde Avenue. Developers plan to build 44 housing units on three floors along with an underground garage. The building would be geared to seniors 55 and above, and residents would own a share of the building instead of paying rent. And the Tribune reported that members of the Ames School Board have expressed support for the idea of them wearing matching regalia at future high school graduations. Board member Monique Binken said, in her words, "We want to communicate that we are a unit and that we all have the same voice and position." It was not known how much any new regalia would cost. The Trib is not published on Mondays, and the big story in Tuesday's edition was the fire that damaged an Ames house used as a residential treatment home for teenage girls who have alcohol and substance abuse issues. The blaze broke out late Sunday night at 712 Burnett Avenue. The home is owned by YSS. Eight girls and two staff members were there. They all escaped injury. Firefighters quickly knocked down the flames, which were confined to the rear of the building. That area housed the kitchen, a closet, and the annex where residents spent much of their time. The cause of the fire was still under investigation, and damage estimates were not available on Monday. The girls were being temporarily housed in a hotel. YSS Chief Executive Officer Andrew Allen said, "It was too early to know whether the organization and the girls would be able to return to the Burnett Avenue home." Tuesday's Trib also reported that about 80 people rallied outside Iowa Congressman Steve King's office in Ames on Monday afternoon. They were there to protest just about everything about King, including his stance on immigration and his rhetoric. Numerous protesters either had signs or were wearing T-shirts in support of King's opponent in this November's race for the 4th Congressional District, J.D. Scholten. That district includes much of the northwest quadrant of Iowa, from Sioux City to Ames and Mason City. It includes Story and Boone counties. The Tribune tried to get comments from King's office in Ames, but the newspaper's phone calls were not returned. One more note from Tuesday's Trib. Five of the seven members of the Des Moines group accused of robbing attendees at a party in Ames last April now have their trial dates. The five have pleaded not guilty, and their trials are set for August 21st. All seven men are charged with robbery, burglary, and theft in connection with the incident that took place in the 1100 block of Grand Avenue. Wednesday's Tribune reported that the United Way has found a small increase in the Story County poverty rate in recent years. The county's poverty rate increased from 20% in 2014 to 22% in 2016. But there's a catch. That 22% rate is inflated in Story County and other counties with major universities because college students are considered to be poor residents in the data the report uses. Wednesday's paper also reported that some of the businesses on or near Lincoln Way in Ames will be rezoned following action Tuesday night at the city council meeting. The council adopted measures establishing the downtown Gateway Commercial District. The council approved new zoning standards and the area where they will be applied. And that area changed on Tuesday night. The council originally looked at putting those standards in place along Lincoln Way between Duff and Grand Avenues from south of the railroad tracks to a block south of Lincoln Way. But Tuesday night, the council voted to not impose the standards in the area north and west of the section of Gilchrist Street that is west of Clark Avenue. That area includes such businesses as Culver's, Abelardo's Mexican Food, Orange Leaf, Little Caesars, and the Marine Corps Recruiting Office. All of this action is designed to encourage more urban commercial development south of downtown. There was more in Wednesday's Tribune, including word that the owner of the Crestview Mobile Home Park in Ames now has a deadline to pay $2,100 on six abandoned trailers in his park if he wants to be considered for any future tax abatement. That was the outcome of Tuesday's Board of Supervisors meeting. Supervisor Rick Sanders said, in his words, "It's time to get that place cleaned up and figure out what's next for that piece of property." The board wants Crestview's owner to pay the taxes he owes by the end of the month. The paper also reported that about 20 people gathered in the Ames City Auditorium on Tuesday night to hear representatives from Alliant Energy talk about why it needs an 8.4% rate hike. The company says such a hike would generate about $20 million a year from its 225,000 Iowa customers and that the money is needed to help pay for what a company spokesman described as the billions of dollars invested in the state's gas system in recent years. Some residents complained about that hike, but most of those in attendance didn't talk about it. Instead, they complained about so-called smart meters that Alliant is installing on Iowa homes, meters that send usage data to the company wirelessly. Some people believe the radio frequencies the meters release may be harmful to their health. Thursday's Tribune reported that the Ames City Council has approved the first reading of an ordinance that would provide different options for homeowners affected by the city's new rental cap in some neighborhoods near the Iowa State campus. The ordinance needs two more readings before it's adopted. If it is approved, it would grant certain exemptions to homeowners in the rental cap areas, potentially allowing some properties to be sold as rentals and permitting others to obtain rental permits, both regardless of the cap in their neighborhood. Back in May, as you may recall, the council passed the rental cap ordinance, which prohibits the issuance of new rental permits in seven neighborhoods where at least 25% of single-family homes and duplexes are rentals, or if a new rental would push the concentration above 25%. One of those neighborhoods was the West Side neighborhood. On Tuesday night, the council did not take any action on a request by some West Side residents who wanted their neighborhood removed from that cap. Thursday's Tribune also reported on the new associate principal of Ames High. Brian Carrico started out as an eighth-grade social studies teacher in Des Moines and served as associate principal at Waukee Middle School. At Ames High, he says he wants to focus on student support and mental health issues. Also in the Trib yesterday, the first of a three-part series by reporter Dan Micah, looking at the struggle young farmers face as they try to set down roots in Iowa. This first story features 24-year-old Noah Taylor, who farms in a small town just south of the Boone-Dallas County line. You can read all about Noah in Thursday's Trib. And you can also read about the new sports bar that's scheduled to open in Campustown in August. It will be known as the BNC Fieldhouse, and it will be in the 200 block of Welch Avenue. And Thursday's Trib has a reminder for all of us that Ames City Hall and most departments are going to be closed next Wednesday for the July 4th holiday. The library will be closed, and so will the Ames ISU Ice Arena. But as always, there will be a free community pancake breakfast from 8:30 to 10:30 on the 4th in front of City Hall. And that 4th of July parade on Main Street will start at 11, and it is a good one. In the Tribune today, Friday, word that the fatal shooting of a Boone man by police as they were responding to a domestic abuse call at a home last April has been deemed to be justified by the Boone County Attorney's Office. That office says the use of force was necessary to defend the officers from the imminent use of unlawful force on themselves or someone else. Authorities said Timothy Wayne Anderson charged at police with a knife when they arrived at a home at 602 2nd Street, and he failed to comply with orders to drop it. Police then fired their weapons at him. Today's Trib also reports that Ames National Corporation Chief Executive Officer John Pullman is retiring today after 21 years with the company. Ames National is the holding company for First National Bank, Boone Trust and Bank, and several other banks around Iowa. And the Trib has part two of its series today on how beginning farmers are struggling to survive in Iowa. Today's story by reporter Dan Micah focuses on a couple trying to make it on a farm in Hamilton County. And Jackie and Maggie, there it is, your summary of the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm still Dennis Hart, and I hope to be back here live next Friday. And between now and then, I hope you too and everybody listening has a great weekend and a fantastic 4th of July.
Thank you, Dennis. I hope you're live and back here with us too. I really enjoy your, appreciate your roundup of news, because I tend to scan those papers quickly and lay them down, and I intend to go back and read more, and I don't get back to them. So I love hearing your round, and especially at the top of that news you read, that we are going to have a quiet Ames this 4th of July.
Well, we're supposed to, but you know, I live just up the street here at Old Town, and I heard some fireworks last night going off, even though no one's supposed to set them off. So.
Right. It'll happen, but last year was pretty bad in my estimation. It was out of hand.
Yeah,
so.
We need to remind people, even though the state legalized fireworks sales, the cities have the right to ban them, and Ames has banned the setting off.
Right.
Fireworks here. So, Jackie, put that firework down right now.
I'm sorry. Can't help it.
Caught you right there in the act. All right. Well, thanks, Dennis.
You bet.
The Alluvial Brewing Company in Ames is having a unique event this coming Sunday, July 1st. The event is called Yoga and Craft Brews, and our intern, Colin Brzezik, went to talk with them to learn more about it. And here's Colin.
On July 1st, Alluvial Brewing Company, located here in Ames off of 190th Street, will be hosting a beer tasting and yoga session. Joining us in studio today is the yoga instructor for the event, Ashley Griesman. Ashley, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you, Colin?
Good, good. It's a little rainy out, but, you know, it's been a really rainy June, actually.
It has been, this week especially.
I know. I'm waiting for the sun to peek out.
Yeah. Sometimes these rains can be really cleansing, though.
Yeah. So I mean, that's a good way of looking at it, for sure. I'm okay with doing, like, cardio, and I try to lift weights like every now and then, you know, but yoga is just such an intimidating thing to me because I can barely bend over and tie my shoes without feeling like I'm going to pull something.
Yes, but that's such a huge misconception. I feel like people are intimidated by it, which is kind of why something like yoga at a brewery is more inviting to people that aren't necessarily comfortable, you know, trying yoga for the first time in a studio.
Yeah,
which can
definitely.
Be intimidating. It's pretty fun.
How did you start doing yoga?
Well, it depends on in general. So in general, I started doing yoga, like, I think I was like 14 or 15 years old, because it was this crazy coincidence. But my soccer coach had like a very unconventional way of coaching us. And so we had yoga once a week for practice. We'd start and we'd do yoga for an hour with, like probably the only yoga instructor in Mason City, Iowa. And it was fantastic. So I would basically take a nap every day. You know, or once a day or that once a week for the entire soccer season, which was amazing. And I didn't even realize that what yoga was. But so I was exposed to it really early. And then for every game, we would sit and we would meditate before the game, visualizing like scoring a goal and doing those kinds of things. So I was exposed really early and then kind of lost practice, really like some mindfulness and meditation stuff here and there. And then really picked up about 5 years ago. I was really craving some heat. I had lived in Africa for a couple years and I came back to Ames and was like, oh my gosh, I need some heat. It's so cold here. And someone said, well, there's a hot yoga studio. So then I started going to Ignite and now I teach there.
Wow. One thing led to another.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how long have you been instructing at Ignite then?
So for about 2 years. Yeah. So about 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
All right. And for all the listeners who don't know, Ignite Studio is located off of Stang. Is
off
that right?
Of Stang. Yep. Right up in the Somerset area.
So in your opinion, what are the main benefits of doing yoga?
There are so many different answers. I think personally, the benefits for me, the ability to become more aware of the inner workings of yourself. So it's kind of like you, if you imagine yourself as an onion and you're peeling back this onion, you know, all the folds, and to figure out what's in the center and what, who you really truly are, and then finding a lot of acceptance with who you are. But obviously, if you're doing yoga for the first time, you're not going to peel back that onion right away. So there's a lot of benefits, like physical benefits. You know, if you are running and lifting weights, a lot of those activities can be a lot of repetition. And so you're not necessarily using a lot of other muscles. So some people really love to do bicep curls. Well, if you're always doing bicep curls, you're only working one muscle or two muscles or, you know, that area. So it's really like a whole body and mind exercise.
Do you happen to know how the partnership between Alluvial and Ignite came to be?
So I asked Emily, yes, the owner of Ignite Studio, because I was curious too. And she had heard of yoga at breweries and reached out to Elliot, the owner of Alluvial, you know, unite the community and kind of bring yoga out into the community rather than having everyone from the community come to the studio.
To drink some beers and exercise, so both good things.
Yes, and if you don't drink beer, they have kombucha, and I think they have cold brew coffee too.
So oh, so drink. there's alternatives. There's not just beer.
Right.
So, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So was there a moment when you realized, man, I really want to instruct yoga. I want to do this.
I don't know if there was a moment. I think it was like I started like getting really into yoga and really diving deeper into my own practice and doing a lot of research online about different poses and different types of yoga. There's so much so many different types of yoga and how mm-hmm. people practice it. And yeah, and then I was like, well, maybe I should learn more.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Actually take a class. And I mean, that's my type of personality anyways, life learner, always consistently like try to make myself better at whatever I'm doing. So it's not necessarily for myself, but at the same time, it kind of was because I wanted to figure out what yoga was all about.
So you said there's different types of yoga, obviously. So do you instruct more than just one type of yoga at Ignite?
Yes. At Ignite, there are lots of different classes that are offered depending on what type of yoga you're really craving that day. I started teaching restorative yoga when I began teaching at Ignite, which is like a yin style, calmer, more contemplative, meditative asana, which mm-hmm. is like the practice. And then personally, I got really into like an Ashtanga-based vinyasa style, which is a more physical style. So as soon as I got into that, I talked to Emily about teaching a different type of yoga, and she is just lets you do whatever you are craving to do, which I think is really positive so that we can feel the most fulfilled and we can share that passion with our students. Yeah, and then at this point, I'm really just subbing any class that is needing, so all over the board.
So how long do your sessions usually last?
So classes are an hour.
They're an hour?
Yeah, but I did teach an hour and a half. I feel like an hour and a half is a really good time for a class, but for mm-hmm. somebody to commit an hour and a half is hard.
Yeah,
so an hour kind of keeps it that good medium.
So how big would you say your classes usually are? How many people do you instruct?
So, I mean, you can have two people show up to full house at 32.
Yeah. 32, wow.
Yeah, that's at the Ignite. And then at the brewery, I think we do about 30.
Mm-hmm.
And I know in the past they've had to turn people away because it just fills up. And
I can imagine. Do you only do one session for Alluvial or is it multiple?
So we all split it up. So yeah, mm-hmm. so I'll do one session this summer and then.
Cool.
Yeah.
Are you nervous at all? Are you pretty excited?
No, I'm just super excited.
Yeah, definitely.
I think teaching outside of the studio is really fun because you get different people mm-hmm. who've never experienced yoga. So you can really dig deeper into the beginner level. I always like to do.
I feel like it's a really good way to get the community involved with it.
Yeah, it's a community outreach and almost just like a, hey, this is yoga.
I see on social media all the time, a vast majority of things have been integrated into yoga. Anything from obviously pairing beer with doing yoga to even goats in yoga.
Yeah.
What would you personally like to integrate into yoga?
That one is so hard. I think anything that is a group of people that might not have been exposed to yoga. You know, it's that kind of exposure that once people get a taste of it, they feel better, they have that shavasana, they have that meditative silence. You know, I feel like as a society, we've really gotten away from being able to relax, and some people actually can't relax. And so you almost have to reteach yourself how to, you know, unwind. And so sometimes if you reach a group that has never been exposed to it, that would be the population that I would probably aim for.
So as much as there is a physical aspect to yoga, there's also a mental aspect to it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I feel like that's the most fulfilling, and that's probably why I want to share it with people so much, is because I've felt so much benefit in my life personally from mental clarity and giving yourself a break.
What would you say is the most rewarding part of being an instructor? Obviously, you touched base on being able to share your knowledge and, I guess, share the feelings that yoga brings to you with others. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else?
Yeah, so I think the most rewarding part of teaching is to witness the change within someone else. So seeing them week after week, the change that happens in their life from the practice of yoga. Because you can't tell someone to feel a certain way, and you can't, you can cue poses, but that change has to come from within them. So watching that, it's kind of like a caterpillar to a butterfly, and you watch that transition, and it's very fulfilling.
So what would you say your main goal is of hosting this event?
I think, like we've already said, I think it's the idea of reaching a population, exposing a population that's not necessarily the beer drinkers aren't probably. I mean, they probably cross their circles, but really targeting a population that's not super familiar with yoga.
Are you guys partnered up with anyone else outside of Alluvial that you know of? Or?
Yeah, so people reach out to us for instructors constantly. So I think Brenda, an instructor at Ignite, is now teaching over at Torrent. We have some instructors that teach over at the brewery in Boone. Violet and Valor, the hair salon, had a yoga, I think it was last summer, and had an instructor come in and do, a bunch of different Saturdays. And then a bunch of instructors go down to Des Moines, too. And there's a new pop-up yoga Ames that just started. And I think their first one might be even tonight, which might be canceled because of the rain. But if you follow them on Instagram, she posts and she'll tell you where they're having yoga, and then you can just go, and it's a free event. So it's kind of fun too.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks to all the listeners out there for tuning in to 89.1 KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Colin Burzak, and I want to give a special thanks to instructor Ashley Giesman for stopping in.
And that was KHOI intern Colin Burzak talking with Ashley Griesman about Alluvial Brewing Company's event this Sunday, Yoga and Craft Brews.
I'm kind of curious how that event is going to turn out. I know that I personally do not have enough balance to do yoga, period, let alone doing it while you're drinking. So don't know how that's going to turn out, but unfortunately I won't be able to check it out anyways until next year, since I'm not old enough to partake.
You just created quite a vision in my mind with the way you put that. I could see you trying to balance the...
Right?
Yeah.
I can hardly just balance on one foot.
Okay, switching gears. Several teachers from the Ames School District have formed an initiative called the Community Academy, which is focused on bringing in innovative educational opportunities to young people in this area. Local Talk reporter Gail Seiler spoke with Colin Reichert about the goals of this project and what they're offering to the Ames community.
You're part of a group that's trying to bring about some innovative change in education here in Ames. Who's involved in this group and what are your backgrounds?
My name is Colin Reichert. I'm a teacher at Ames High School. I've been there for a couple of years, and before that I was at Ames Middle School, so I have a background in science education. Also joining me, we have Mike Todd, who's a teacher at Ames High School as well, science education also. And then Melissa May Maxey is a teacher at Kate Mitchell Elementary, and then we have an intern, Anya Chamberlain, who's working with us with the summer experience.
And Anya, you were a student at Ames High School.
Yeah, I graduated in 2015, but I was involved in a lot of the projects that Mike Todd encouraged students to do at the high school, and I took environmental science. But now I'm at Grinnell, and I decided that this summer I wanted to come back to Ames and help out with the Community Academy because I knew that it would give other students opportunity to have the same kind of educational experiences that I thought were really formative for me.
And I imagine that the people who are involved in this project, which I'm assuming is a lot of work, but you're dedicated and you share some kind of vision of what you would want education to be. So tell us about that vision.
I think a lot of the details are still being worked out as we work together. But we definitely hold to this statement. Our vision for the Community Academy is to develop a systemic culture of community and nature-based education. Embedded within that are some core values that we believe in. So the community aspect and getting students actively involved in community efforts or starting new ones. Developing strong, resilient relationships that last beyond just a semester. Having an interdisciplinary approach to education. Project-based learning, kind of that Anya experienced in Mike Todd's class. Nature-based activities, so being outside in natural settings as much as possible. And also this nature of disciplines aspect, where we go into more than just learning about subjects or disciplines, but actually having students do disciplines. So what does it mean to do science? How do scientists construct knowledge? How do historians construct knowledge? How are those different approaches similar and different? What's the difference between science and engineering? And all those kind of aspects would be addressed heavily. We also like this mindfulness approach that's becoming more popular in a lot of schools. This slowing down and just taking stock of what's happening around us and making sure that we know how we want to respond as opposed to just react to things that are occurring. We also want to develop a global perspective and ensure that students are involved in collective decision-making along with anyone that's working at the organization. I think that hits our core values.
Very ambitious. Why do you think we need a different vision for education? Why are you trying to create these alternative experiences for students?
Well, in a way, it's not really different. I think we would all agree that we hold these things powerfully, that we're trying to do it as best we can in the school district. But the school district has placed upon it quite a few barriers, I guess, to fully implementing this kind of stuff. So, for example, at the Community Academy with our summer programming, we're not beholden to state standards or state assessments or anything like that. So what we develop is purely up to our intellectual abilities. There's a lot more intellectual freedom with doing it this way. But we're definitely trying to do this within the school system as well. But because of the demands and challenges that the school system faces, I think we get to try it a little bit differently with the summer experience.
So let's talk about the summer experience then. What is that?
Well, we started out with originally 3 weeks of programming. We've cut that back to 2. And in the first week, which is themed Our Land, students, at least at the secondary level, are going to be learning a lot more about the local community and how to become stewards of land. In particular, we'll be studying the work of Aldo Leopold as best we can in 1 week. And also involve students with some mathematical application in the construction of Leopold benches to be placed throughout the community. Now, we want to ensure that there's as much autonomy as possible with what students do and self-directed learning, but being in one-week blocks means that we have to make a lot of the decisions ahead of time just to make sure that we get something accomplished in that week. And then the second week is themed Our Water, and we'll be exploring local waterways and hopefully, if water levels are good enough, actually canoeing some local waterways and perhaps even overnight camping. So students would learn a lot about what does it take to actually do that, recreate outside. How do you plan for an event like this? How do you pack food for it? How do you prepare the food? How do you set up camp, all this kind of stuff. Meanwhile, we learn about the history of the area, going back to Native American use of the land and then immigrants into the area and how they used it for timber and how it's used currently, and also the local ecology of the waterways.
And so I can see how it would be interdisciplinary, that whether it would be combining history, science, writing, reading,
absolutely,
literature, maybe even math.
Yeah, and I'm of the belief that you can't escape that, so absolutely. I think if we just call it what it is, all learning is interdisciplinary by nature.
Anya, what is your role? What have you been working on getting ready for the summer experience?
So as an intern, I've been helping out with some of the marketing materials, like making brochures and our business cards, distributing, I guess, flyers around town and looking for grants and kind of understanding, I guess, all the details of a nonprofit organization. I've been kind of a part of learning with Mike and Colin as we like learn about tax-exempt charitable donations.
Anya is also going to be serving on the board.
And so let's get some specifics so people know when and where is the summer experience, and is it still open to enrollment?
Yes, we are still open for enrollment through July 6th. And we're going to be based out of the City Church of Ames on 2400 Oakwood Road. So pickup and drop-off will be there. Information can be found at www.thecommunityacademy.org. There's tuition, but there's a sliding scale tuition charge based on family income.
And people can sign their children up for the 2 weeks? Or 1 week, is that correct?
Absolutely, yeah. But we want to get something done this summer and have some experiences and see what the community thinks of it.
And what has been the reaction so far?
So far, overwhelming support. Everything is still in its idealistic stages. So, of course, the ideal is always supported. We'll see the realities with the summer experience. And for me, I'm particularly interested in how parents and students react to experiences. I think in some sense we're just reinstilling, I guess, this direct experience that is missing from childhood and definitely missing in our schools. We've moved towards, I think, an education that relies on secondary experience as opposed to primary experience. So getting kids out in the community instead of just learning about a community. Getting students doing construction instead of learning about construction. So actually experiencing this stuff. And I think part of the concern has been liability issues. I know we've talked with administrators in the district about my desire to canoe and kayak, and I was surprised to learn that the school district used to have a fleet of canoes and kayaks, and we eventually had to get rid of them because of liability. I want to live in a world where kids are doing things and still being part of nature, interacting with the local surroundings. There's an attempt we often make to educate students about very important issues. For example, I've spent a lot of time trying to teach students about climate change. Right? But if we teach it as some abstract thing that's going to affect different areas, instead of looking at what might be some manifestations of climate change outside that we can actually go and study, I don't think students are going to value something they can't directly experience.
And you think that students of all ages can benefit from this kind of learning? Your community academy idea and the summer experience is open to K-12, is that right?
Pre-K through 12. I have a 4-year-old daughter who will be enrolled, and my 6-year-old son will be enrolled as well.
So that's really different, students of different ages and grade levels learning with and from each other.
Absolutely. We'll do grade banding with similar age groups, but there'll definitely be a chance for interaction between different age peers. I mean, a lot of schools will try. They'll have mentoring programs and buddy programs. But again, everything in our school system is driven by coverage of a lot of material, right? And we got to get through a lot of material. So making room for mentoring opportunities with different age groups, you might not have the time to do it.
And Anya, you mentioned the impact that some of the experiences you had in Mr. Todd's classes had on you. What were the kinds of projects and things that you were involved with?
Probably the biggest one was a project some of his students before I was in environmental science, they asked him if they could do this thing called the Lexicon of Sustainability. So it's a artist from California who made artwork about food systems and explained, like with words on them, what certain terms mean about food system. But his art didn't include a lot about Iowa, so the students were like, let's make stuff about this area. So I became a part of that, and we went to visit different farmers in the area. Like, we went to an aquaponics operation. I made a piece of artwork about farm to folk, just describing different community initiatives about food and soil quality and sustainability. So it was definitely about science and understanding. But then I got to do artwork and learn and figure out how to communicate what was happening. And then we used that artwork to talk to legislators and advocacy groups in D.C. And yeah, I was 17. I was talking about this artwork I made, and Chuck Grassley like wanted to engage in a conversation where I argued with him about concepts about agriculture, and he listened. And then it felt like, okay, I can do something that people listen to, it's relevant, and I'm not just memorizing something where the final result is me repeating it on a test. I felt like I was learning how to be engaged in something that was more important.
You actually went to Washington, D.C.?
Yeah. It was like 3 days that were just completely jam-packed. And then we had meetings with groups at USDA and then Farm Food and Farm Network, or just so many things, and it was amazing.
I think that summarizes why we want to do this.
And are you going to collect any data or information? How will you evaluate the first summer?
So a new board member, Malai Amfar, who's with United Way as well, she's developed some ways of actually evaluating programs. So I think we might use a variation of that. We don't have our sights set too high, though. With 2 weeks of instruction, I don't think there's too much we can change as far as like a paradigm shift or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So if we glimpse anything like that, that would be fantastic. But in a sense, getting to know how valued the experiences were by parents and students would be the primary analytics that I'd be interested in.
And then what's the future hold for you? I know you're in the early stages,
but where
would you like to take this?
Wherever it goes. So we're definitely looking at possibly some after-school programming during the next school year, and then next summer expanding into a wider program. So depending on what kind of help and insight and reaction we get from the community, wherever it goes, it goes. But we definitely are passionate about it and seeing it through.
And you mentioned that you formed a nonprofit already.
We did, yes.
And you have a board of directors, so you've done a lot of the kind of behind the scenes putting things together. And you have a website.
We do.
So what kind of information and what will people learn when they go to the website?
It's information on our vision, something that we shared here, but also registration information. If they want to be added to email lists, they can request to be added to our email list. Registration for the summer experience, and also if they want to offer any kind of assistance to us, we'll have a support us page on our website, and people can learn information about how they could contribute to our efforts.
Okay, so people can donate financially and support you, or they can support you and offer assistance in other ways that you may need?
All of the above. Okay. We definitely still are in the fundraising stages and need to fundraise quite a bit. We also need people with various expertise jumping on board and helping us along, because we are not experts in forming nonprofits. I think we got the teaching part down to a respectable level, but these other things are new to us. What we're providing, I think, is just another experience for students that complements what's being done by the district and other programs throughout the summer from the district and other organizations as well. So we're just adding more to the mix for what's available in Ames.
Based on your enrollment so far, who seems to be attracted to this in terms of age groups?
It's mostly primary level.
Younger kids.
So we're looking for encouraging more secondary applications.
So if any high school students or middle school students are out there and still looking for something to do for a week, they might check this out. Are there particular writers or educators who have impacted you as you've been thinking about what you want education to be?
Quite a few. One that stands out more than the others would be the work of John Dewey, especially Experience in Education and Democracy in Education. Yeah, I think we're trying to basically put into place a system of education that Dewey espoused in the early 1900s. Not very new, what we're trying to do. It's just making sure that we do it. I think the message is still applicable to today's society.
So tell us again the website.
Website is www.thecommunityacademy.org.
This is KHOI 89.1 FM, and you just heard Gail Seiler interviewing some teachers in Ames about the summer experience being offered by the Community Academy. And this is a new initiative led by these Ames teachers. We will include a link to their website when we put the show up on our KHOI website, so you can look further into that if you'd care to. If you just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and I'm one of your hosts today, Maggie Westfold, with our sound engineer and newly appointed Local Talk host, Jackie Norman. How's hosting going so far, Jackie? This is her first time, folks.
It's not too bad. It's going pretty good so far, I think, anyways.
I think you're a natural. There you go. I think you're doing great.
So now we've been joined by an extra person here in the studio with us, Amber Corrieri, Director of Communications at Mainstream Living, to talk to us about an event that's going on tomorrow called the Cycle Games. Hello, Amber.
Hello.
This is Maggie again, and I'm going to talk with Amber here a little bit about this event. Cycle Games. Is this the first year for this event?
It is the first year. You know, we've been wanting to do a fun event for a while, and we have a lot of bike riders that work at our office. So we thought this would be a great way to raise a little money, engage the community, and just provide a fun activity on a Saturday morning.
Right, right. It's a popular thing for organizations and causes to a way to do a fundraising event and have fun at the same time. Tell us some about Mainstream Living. What is Mainstream Living?
Sure. So Mainstream Living provides residential and supportive services to adults with disabilities and mental illness. We are a Central Iowa organization, so we not only operate in Story County, but also in Polk, Boone, and Dallas counties as well. Most of our services, I think what people are probably familiar with are our residential services. So homes that we own or operate where individuals with disabilities live and receive services, or also serving individuals who live in their own homes, and then we can go in and provide them with the supports that they may need based on their goals and their skills and their abilities.
All right. Okay. And your involvement with this event, what is your position at Mainstream Living?
I'm the director of communication, so I really am in charge of fundraising, grant writing, community outreach, volunteer
Anything
programs.
Else they need done,
yep,
right?
Yeah, it's sort of, you know, I wear a lot of hats, but that's okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It makes the job more interesting. This particular event, Cycle Games, is it going to fund specific mainstream programs or just generally benefit? How's that? What are your plans for the?
So, you know, as a lot of your listeners might know, the Medicaid system in the state of Iowa was privatized in 2016, and that has been particularly challenging for agencies like ours. And one of the things that we are doing is trying to identify ways that we can be more efficient in the way that we serve people. And one way that we're doing that is by serving more people in our homes. So 5 is the maximum that you can serve in a house. And some of our homes currently have 3 or 4 people. And so we are working on a few projects to convert some of those homes to 5 bedrooms. And Medicaid does not cover capital costs. So we identify grants and private fundraising and events like this in order to supplement those capital expenses.
Okay. I'm going to guess that I know myself and people listening, I'm going to guess that everybody has someone in their life who's served by Mainstream Living and organizations that handle the same important work. Such an important support organization for families, and that what has happened with the privatization of Medicaid has made it much more difficult to do your jobs, I know, to help these people who need our support every day. Excuse me. And I'm impressed with your efforts and with program or events like this to supplement your funding issues. So I'm hoping that you have a nice big turnout for this. What's your weather forecast? Is it going to be nice and hot?
It'll be nice and hot, but our starting and ending location has the air conditioned, so people are welcome to hang out inside. And then people who are – we have 2 routes. So we have an 8-mile route for those who may not be experienced cyclists, and then we have a 40-mile route for those looking for a bit more of a challenge or who may be prepping for Regbri. But those on the 40-mile route will also have a stop midway that will have air condition and you know, indoor restrooms and all those things that people appreciate. So
that's a good point. It will be a good tune-up for people planning to be a part of Regbri.
Yep, we'll have lots of water on the route and snacks, so hopefully we can keep everyone comfortable. before they arrive back for lunch.
And tell us again when this is going to take place.
So this is Saturday morning at 10 a.m. We are meeting at the Time Out Arcade Bar in downtown Ames. If you haven't been there, it's a great place. It's a whole lot of fun. It kind of takes you back to your childhood times of, you know, playing video games. And so that's kind of, you know, how we spun the theme a little bit, too, is it's not just cycling, but we've got that arcade aspect worked in for, like I said, people who may not be serious cyclers and want some other activity to do as well.
Yeah, that'd be me.
Yes.
Not a serious cycler. I gave my bike away. I gave it to my granddaughter because I kept looking at it and not riding it. I'm more of a walker. And I need to keep that going. But I hope this event is very successful for – I know these biking events are generally very successful.
Yeah, you're seeing
more
and more
of
them. And that's, you know, also one of the challenges is just trying to identify a day where there's not another bike event happening.
I'll bet.
That's virtually impossible to do. But
yeah,
there's enough bikers for all of us. So
a couple weeks ago, I'm driving around downtown Ames just trying to run my errands, and oops, I can't go there. They're setting up barricades right where I wanted to turn, and I just had to keep a happy smile on my face and turn the other direction.
Yeah, and we have some great bike organizations in Ames that really help promote these events and kind of advocate for cycling throughout the community. So
yeah,
that's helpful.
I'm sure.
Speaking of some of your sponsors, actually, I was like scrolling through them the other day and stuff, and I just found it kind of funny that one of them is the city of Cedar Falls, just the whole city, and that's actually where I grew up. So that was pretty interesting to see that.
Yeah. Supporting this event. Well, that's neat.
Yeah, we have some great sponsors. Great Western Bank is our primary sponsor. And then, of course, Time Out with providing the location and the resources and assistance. We're excited to have them on board and hopefully can grow this in future years.
Wonderful. Well, do you have is there anywhere where people can, check into this on a website? Or?
Sure. Yeah. They can go to our website directly, mainstreamliving.org. They can also go to our Facebook page. Just find us at Mainstream Living. And we've got the event set up on Facebook. There's some information on our website. Of course, people can register in advance or show up on Saturday morning and join us.
Okay. So if you find out about it late, you can just show up and be
a
part of it.
Absolutely. We've got T-shirts and lunch for all the riders and plenty of fun after everyone gets done.
Sounds great. I hope that Mother Nature blesses you with no rain. I don't have any idea what the forecast is. But I hope this turns out to be a very successful event for you.
Thank you.
Maybe this is the first of many years of doing this.
We hope so.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Amber, for joining us today, and good luck with that event. It sounds like a fun one and for a great cause, certainly.
All right. Yeah. Thank you again for coming in, Amber. It's been great to have you in.
I just want to tell you again that I think you've done a great job of hosting your first show. I haven't been doing this for all that long. It was about a year ago that I remember sitting here thinking, oh, my goodness, they put a mic in front of me and they told me I'm a host. It's a fun experience. These people here are wonderful, very supportive, and I encourage anybody who has an interest in radio in any way to come in and see what we're about down here. I walked in here and asked. I was ready to do some volunteer work. And I'd heard KHOI, and then I read a story in the paper about B.J. Kearns, who passed away and had been a volunteer here, had her own program. This is terrible. I can't remember. It's Elizabeth Sundays with Elizabeth. It was her music anyway, and she used the name Elizabeth. It's still sort of being carried on by Paul Lundy, and I apologize for not having all the right names for the information. But it was reading that story about BJ, whom I sort of knew from my past, but not – I just was inspired. And I decided, okay, you're the first people who get me as a volunteer. I'm going to. So I walked in to ask if I could stuff envelopes. I really did. And they said, the gal I talked to, Becca the intern, said, well, what would you think of being a reporter on local talk? And I said, what's a reporter? And it kind of just went from there. Now, they didn't tell me all the scary parts. So it was been quite a learning experience. And I really recommend it to people if you have an interest in that. This is a wonderful group of people. This station is run totally by volunteers, and I think it's so amazing what Ursula and team have done down here.
A ton of interns right now, including me. And, yeah, I've been the sound engineer for a few months now, almost going a few months shy of a year pretty much.
Yeah.
And it's been a lot of fun here. But, yeah, they asked me if I would help out with the hosting since they didn't have anyone here for today. So, obviously, I'm not very well versed in the whole hosting thing. So
yeah, Jackie stuck her hand up and said she would handle the whole thing, and they were wise enough to say, Jackie, you need somebody sitting in there with you because you might have a problem and have to leave the studio, and you can't. So I'm just sitting here helping Jackie in case she needs to lose. And she had to leave the studio once to welcome Amber in. So it's been great. And I think we should do this again. I think maybe we are going to try another show together here in another 10 days or so. But it's a great experience. And Jackie and the other interns, I think there's four or five of them, just a wonderful group of interns that are working here right now. And it's a great experience for them, and it's great for KHOI.
Yeah, we're definitely welcoming more people. So, like, if anyone out there thinks that they can do this a lot better than me, I totally believe you, and you should come show me how it's done. And more professional people will train you how to do it. So
right. You get wonderful support here.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's great experience. I would definitely recommend doing it.
Yeah.
We have reached the end of our show at this point in time, so we're going to start wrapping it up here. Again, this was Local Talk at KHOI Community Radio at 89.1 FM. I've been one of your hosts today, Jackie Norman, with Maggie Westfold.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also, remember, you can listen to the show online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI streams live online at khoifm.org.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from the CD The Ballad of Shade Kelly. Local Talk is a radio production as well as a show. So like we were just talking about, if you want to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you down here and someone way more qualified will teach you. It's a really cool team, Local Talk.
And remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Y is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. The Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun every Saturday, located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza. The Farmers Market brings fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment.